I don't think there's going to be another big finance company in mining that's going to come in and help these people out.
More financial developments for the proposed Pebble Mine. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, May 25th. Good evening. I'm Zachariah Hughes. Also tonight, the EPA pledges to address certain groundwater contaminants that have been affecting Alaska communities.
This is a national priority that we need to focus upon as a country.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Heroin is an opioid known for risks of addiction and overdose. But prescription opioids such as hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine can also carry these risks. If you're prescribed an opioid for pain, ask your medical provider about the risks and ask about alternative treatments. Learn more about opioid safety at opioids.alaska.gov. This message brought to you by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
A major business deal has fallen through for the proposed Pebble Mine. A Canadian mining company, First Quantum Minerals, will no longer back the controversial project. KDLG's Avery Lill has more.
Northern Dynasty Minerals, the sole owner of the Pebble Limited Partnership, announced in a press release late Thursday night that the two companies could not reach an agreement on First Quantum joining the partnership. Back in December, Northern Dynasty said that First Quantum was considering buying into Pebble at $150 million over 4 years. At the end of those 4 years, First Quantum had the option to become a 50% owner of the partnership. According to Pebble, the initial investment would help the permitting phase of the proposed gold, copper, and molybdenum mine in the Bristol Bay region. However, the companies delayed finalizing the agreement in April. Now, they've scrapped the agreement altogether. In response, Pebble CEO Tom Collier said in a statement Friday that the project will continue to press forward. He said, quote, "I believe we will secure the necessary funding to continue the permitting and review process for Pebble under the National Environmental Policy Act. This will result in an environmental impact statement for Pebble," unquote. Environmental groups and some lawmakers were pressuring First Quantum to back out of the deal. Now, opponents of the mine are celebrating. Alaska House Representative Bryce Edgeman of Dillingham called the development significant.
I think it really is a major setback for those that want to develop the project. And assuming all things stay constant from the recent press announcement, I would foresee that it'd be some time before another major investor would come into the project.
Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation President Robin Samuelson thinks that First Quantum's decision throws the mine's future into doubt.
Bristol Bay has spoken, Alaska has spoken, the United States has spoken through the EPA process and the Corps process. I don't think there's going to be another big finance company in mining that's going to come in and help these people out. I think the end is very near for them.
This development makes First Quantum the fourth major financing company to back away from the Pebble project. Since the Pebble Limited Partnership was formed, three other companies have pulled out: the Mitsubishi Corporation in 2011, Anglo-American in 2013, and Rio Tinto in 2014. Northern Dynasty's stock dropped 30% on Friday. That brings the company's stocks to the lowest point since October of 2016. In Dillingham, I'm Avery Lill.
Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt has pledged action to address a type of contamination that's tainted groundwater in Fairbanks and elsewhere. But the agency also reportedly blocked the release of information on the effects of the poly and perfluorinated compounds known as PFAS.
This is a national priority that we need to focus upon as a country.
That's Pruitt speaking this week at an EPA National PFAS Leadership Summit attended by Alaska officials. PFAS is a category of chemical compounds long used in a range of products, from nonstick cookware to firefighting foam, which have contaminated groundwater at 16 facilities in Alaska. There are three sites, all in the Fairbanks North Pole area, where private wells have been tainted as well. Pruitt says the EPA is taking steps to address the issue, including the development of cleanup recommendations and determining a legal threshold for what concentration of the chemicals is dangerous in drinking water. water. EPA currently only has a lifetime exposure level for the compound's health effects, which include cancer. But according to a recent Politico report, the EPA blocked release of a federal assessment of PFAS that showed the compounds to be dangerous in drinking water at lower concentrations than the current standard. Politico reports that one of Pruitt's aides stopped the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry from releasing the assessment earlier this year after a White House official warned it would be, quote, a public relations nightmare. Alaska Community Action on Toxics Executive Director Pam Miller says the blocked assessment follows peer-reviewed studies which confirm health effects at concentrations well below the current federal and state health advisory level at 70 parts per trillion.
We've seen over the past couple of years in particular just kind of a burgeoning of evidence about the health effects of these chemicals at the very low part per trillion level, things like immune system dysfunction, certain types of cancers, kidney and testicular cancer, can occur at very low levels of exposure.
Miller says the public has a right to see the new federal assessment, and it's deeply concerning that the Trump administration has blocked its release. Some states have lowered their health advisory contamination level, but Alaska Department of Health Assessor Stacey Cooper says no immediate action is planned.
Until the report is actually published and we can see it and review it, we're just going to be following the current national guidelines. So, no, there's nothing official that the state is doing. You know, we're looking at studies and we're trying to, you know, understand the situation ourselves. But at the moment, we're just waiting for national advice.
Fairbanks, however, is not waiting. Fairbanks City Council member David Prues recently directed staff to draft a plan over the next 90 days on how the city will respond to the growing problem of groundwater contamination caused by PFAS in firefighting foam. A U.S. judge has ordered Alaska corrections officials to provide Muslim inmates with nutritionally sufficient pork-free meals when they break their Ramadan fasts at night. In an order Friday, U.S. District Court Judge H. Russell Holland says fasting Muslim inmates must be given daily meals containing at least 2,600 calories. Ramadan is the Muslim holy month, marked by fasting from dawn to sunset. Holland had indicated a Thursday that he would grant the emergency order requested by two Muslim inmates being held at the Anchorage Correctional Complex. The men have sued, arguing that the bagged meals they receive each evening range from about 500 to 1,100 calories, when they should be receiving 2,600 to 2,800 calories per day under federal health guidelines. A former Alaska State Trooper charged with attempted sexual abuse of a juvenile has now been indicted for alleged exploitation of a minor and possession of child pornography. 57-year-old Vance Peronto was still a trooper and based in Soldotna when he was initially arrested last month. On Thursday, a grand jury indicted Peronto on the attempted sexual abuse charge and added eight new felony counts of exploitation and possession of child pornography. According to the initial charging document, it all started with a traffic stop. Prosecutors say Peronto pulled over a 16-year-old girl, let her go with a warning, and later struck up a relationship with her through social media. He's accused of soliciting nude photos and videos from the girl before arranging to meet up with her at a hotel. According to the charges, Peronto showed up in his trooper vehicle with underwear he'd bought for the girl, but his fellow troopers and Anchorage police officers were there instead and arrested him. Court records show Peronto bailed out of jail earlier this month. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a rewarding venture down the Klehini River.
From the perspective of the river instead of the road, it's absolutely beautiful.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com. And by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
A Wasilateen is dead after his canoe overturned in Finger Lake. Around 2 a.m. this morning, Alaska State Troopers were notified that a man was screaming on an island in the lake. His canoe had capsized and the man he was boating with had disappeared. A little later, after 6 a.m., the body of 19-year-old Bryce Adams of Wasilla was found. An initial investigation found that neither boater was wearing a life jacket, and alcohol does appear to have been a factor. A 40-year-old Army officer assigned to Alaska has been charged with making false insurance claims and pocketing nearly $400,000. Lieutenant Colonel Christopher James DeMuir is charged with mail fraud, wire fraud, and money laundering. Prosecutors say DeMuir filed fraudulent claims for insurance payments from USAA Federal Savings Bank and American Express starting in September of 2014. Prosecutors say he bought jewelry, performance bicycles, clothing, and electronics, returned them for a refund, and later claimed they were lost or stolen. During his move from Georgia to Alaska's Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson, DeMuir said his rented trailer was burglarized in Kentucky. He claimed a loss of more than $215,000. DeMuir was arrested Thursday and held at an Anchorage jail. Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium is continuing with its acquisition of Wrangell's Hospital. The native nonprofit plans to build and operate a new hospital in the island town within the next 3 years. KSTK's June Leffler has updates on the transition.
Since that announcement, Search scoped out the liabilities of the current hospital. It's falling apart. A number of electrical, sewage, and foundation issues are at the brink of failure. If everything went out all at once, it would cost up to $24 million to get the facility up to code. But Search's Vice President Dan Neumeister says that isn't scaring them off.
What we anticipate might fail over the next couple of years is fairly small. In comparison to that $20 million.
Search says it is looking to pay between $25 to $40 million to build the new hospital, which will connect to the current Search clinic in town. Small city-owned hospitals are struggling across the nation. Merging with larger organizations spreads more resources around.
And a lot of that is just that small hospitals that are independent, standalone facilities just don't have the critical mass to sustain either reimbursement challenges or facility needs, capital equipment needs like buying new equipment, new CT scanner, that kind of thing.
The next steps include a formal buy-in from the city, which could happen mid-June from the assembly. A new hospital could be built by the beginning of 2021. In Wrangell, I'm June Leffler.
Coastal Villages Region Fund provided a record amount of heating oil to households in its Kuskokwim Delta member communities this winter. According to a press release, CVRF distributed 35 gallons of oil to over 2,000 households this year, a total increase of about a third from last year. The nonprofit also distributed oil as part of its elder program, bringing the combined amount to over 100,000 gallons of oil. CVRF has provided heating assistance for the past 10 winters, spending an average of $200,000 a year. This year's figure was close to double that. In 2016, report notes CVRF delivered over $15 million in benefits in 2015. Dana Blakely-Nash is CVRF's community service representative in Chivac, an interim heating oil program coordinator. She says the program helps alleviate the high cost of energy in rural Alaska. The U.S. Department of Agriculture reports an average family in the Chulista region may spend more than $4,000 a year on nearly 900 gallons of heating oil. Hundreds of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta could have their power disconnected in the coming months. A letter from the Alaska Village Electric Cooperative warns residents that if they don't repair their aging electric equipment soon, they won't have electricity. The catch? The customers have to foot the repair bill. KYUK's Christy Schallenberger reports.
Most of the repairs mean installing ground rods or replacing a meter base. It can cost as little as $25 for a new ground rod or as much as $500 for a new meter base. At least 450 Bethel residents have gotten these letters from AVIC. According to the utility, a, quote, few hundred more were sent out to most of the 58 communities the co-op serves. So what's going on? AVEC CEO Mira Kohler says the co-op is keeping a tally of customers who need to repair their electric equipment for safety reasons. AVEC is required to do this under the National Electric Code, which is a federal standard. That standard outlines how electric wires and equipment must operate safely. The news may come as a shock to those living in the region, since customers have to pay for the equipment upgrades. The co-op is only responsible for connecting the wires to the home or business. AVEC advises customers to contact an electrician for the repairs instead of doing it themselves. But what options exist for homes that might not be able to afford the repairs? The co-op doesn't subsidize them, and it's unclear if people can get the funding from other places. In Bethel, I'm Christy Schallenberger.
The police chief recently named to the board that regulates Alaska's legal marijuana industry says the fight has long been waged against pot in this country has been a, quote, waste of time and law enforcement resources. Jeff Ackerfeldt, who is the police chief in the southeast Alaska city of Sitka, says he wants to contribute to the successful implementation of well-thought-out industry regulations. Ackerfeldt was appointed to the Marijuana Control Board's public safety seat, replacing Travis Welch, who only served for about 2 months. Prior to Welch, Soldotna Police Chief Peter Mlynarek held the seat. He resigned in January after the U.S. Department of Justice shifted away from a more lenient stance on marijuana enforcement. Mitch Seavey has lost the support of a major sponsor, and while an animal rights group is claiming credit for the coup, the company denies the connection. Young Living Essential Oils has been a prominent sponsor of the Iditarod Champion since 2014. In an emailed statement, a Young Living representative said the company conducts an annual review of its sponsorships and decided to discontinue its support for any activities related to the sport of mushing. Earlier this month, the company founder, Gary Young, passed away. A Facebook post from Seavey's kennel yesterday alludes to the two men's personal friendship as the basis for the sponsorship. In light of Young's passing, Seavey writes, quote, "I will no longer be a brand ambassador for Young Living," end quote. The loss of support will not alter Seavey's plans to continue racing. The Utah-based company has a multi-level marketing structure that has faced criticism for exploiting lower-level sales representatives, as well as scrutiny from regulators over unproven medical claims it's made about the health benefits of essential oils. Earlier this week, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals claimed that the change was the result of an ongoing campaign to pressure sponsors to end their support for mushing, but the company said that it had made the decision prior to being contacted by PETA.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Matson, committed to the communities it serves, building on more than 50 years of service to the communities of Alaska. Learn more at Matson.com. And by Raven Alaska. Raven now provides Alaskans with the day over, a 24-hour stop in any major hub along the way to a destination, including Anchorage, Kotzebue, and Bethel. More information at RavenDayOver.com.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, summertime fun. Finally. The Klehini River near Haines is about 42 miles long from its source in British Columbia to its mouth at the Chilkat River, of which it is the largest tributary. It's also one of the most accessible and sublime summer rafting experiences to be had in southeast Alaska. KMXT's Daisha Eaton takes us on the journey.
On an overcast afternoon, 8 passengers and 2 guides are ready to push off the bank into the waters of the Klehini River, which weave like strands of ribbon through a rocky plain between steep snow-capped mountains.
This is a glacially fed river, so the water is very, very shallow. It's also very cold. Uniquely this time of year, it's also clear. It's beautiful. It's kind of a emerald green color.
That's Jimmy McNevin, an expedition raft guide for Chilkat Guides out of Haines. Originally from from Minnesota, McNevin says several years ago he left a good-paying job in a cubicle in Denver to work seasonally on Southeast Alaska rivers. And it's not hard to see why he never went back.
We're sandwiched in between two mountain ranges, the Taquinsha and the Tokchinook. The Taquinsha is basically what separates us from Glacier Bay and the ice fields that flow down into Glacier Bay National Park. So we're right on the edge of a whole world of ice here.
The river follows the northern boundary of the Chilkat mountain range. McNevin explains that the Klehini actually starts in Canada.
It's a river that's headwaters are in British Columbia. The Jarvis Glacier flows from right off the Alcan Highway that if you were ever to drive to Haines, you would see it right after you cross the Canadian border into the Haines Highway. You'll see the Klehini River right on the right.
The lower portion of the Klehini, where we're headed today, passes through the Alaska Chilkat Bald Eagle Preserve. The area is called the Council Grounds because it's where thousands of the white-headed raptors congregate annually in the late fall and early winter to feast on salmon. There are quite a few bears in the area as well.
Well, it's still pretty early in the season, so mostly just eagles so far. I've been really craving a bear and moose sighting.
That's another guide, Wiley Betts, originally from Tacoma, Washington, who also left a more traditional job for one on the river.
I worked in Seattle for a few years. I'm from Tacoma, Washington, and I had a pretty good job as a warehouse manager, but I was really stressed out and had a really bad car accident basically as a result of that stress. And one of my best friends has worked up here for 9 years now, and he invited me on a Grand Canyon trip for the third time. After my accident, I called him up and was like, hey, is that still open? Because I'm there.
Betts says he can't imagine doing anything else.
There's nothing I enjoy more than boating.
With all those glaciers fueling its flow, the Klehini's channels can change overnight. It's a braided river, so that means it's always changing, which can be a challenge for guides. Before we take off, Betts gives a safety talk.
If I say duck, I'm not pointing out wildlife. I want you to duck into the boat, not out of it. We might be going over an obstacle, hanging over the boat, and don't grab onto any branches or anything like that as we're going underneath.
This is one of the first rafting trips of the season, which starts in early May and runs through October. Before cruise ship season gets going, the company has invited local people who live in the Haines area for a free ride down the river.
I'm Nene Wolf. I've lived here going on 3 years, but I've been coming up to work here for the last 20 years, maybe.
And you've never done this?
Correct.
We push off into the river in the 18-foot raft weighing 2,000 pounds. It's early spring, so there are still patches of ice along the shoreline. Sometimes to avoid a downed tree or a large rock, guides jump out of the boat and onto the bank with a rope, bringing the raft to a quick stop, then walking it along the river's edge around the obstacles while passengers traverse the river's pebbled shores. And in the shallow water, there are bumps. Here and there, the raft gets stuck on a gravel bar, requiring that everyone on board bounce up and down until the raft breaks loose.
Promise, Sarah, I'll keep bouncing, I promise.
Taking a break on a gravel bar, passenger Nene Wolf is taking it all in.
It's so beautiful, and it's a lot of fun watching our boat guide. Yes, it's so gorgeous. And from the perspective of the river instead of the road, it's absolutely beautiful.
Passengers pick up polished river pebbles as souvenirs, then pile back into the raft and the guides push off downriver. A lone eagle surveys this stretch of the Klehini from his perch on a nearby cottonwood tree. McNevin with Chilkat Guides says when people ask him why he keeps coming back, he tells them,
"It's the place. It's the place. It's Haines. It's glacially fed rivers. It's the scenery. It's the people."
For AK, I'm Daisha Eaton on the Klehini River.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Nancy Murphy in Anchorage, who is a local jazzercise instructor.
I had a friend when we were stationed in California, of all places, who decided one day we were just going to try jazzercise as members and or as friends and go and try it. And I got hooked and she quit, and then I moved and I ended up becoming an instructor because the area I was moving to didn't have jazzercise. I've been an instructor since 1987. I think the thing I like the most is the people. You get to have a part of everybody's lives, even for that just 1 hour a day that they're here, and that's what's kept me doing it for so long. I just love it. My son was a year and a half old when I started teaching, and then now he's 32 years old, so. My daughter did until she went back to work, but my son never really jazzercised. It's usually a woman's activity. There are a few male instructors and male customers, but most of them are female. Actually, next year is going to be its 50th anniversary year, so it's been around a very long time. It is something that's been based on dance, and through the years, it's incorporated both dance as an aerobics base as well as adding strength training, so you're getting a complete workout in your 1 hour that you're here. There really isn't really just a typical person that comes in because we have such a wide age group that walks in the door. Like the class that I just taught, I'll have somebody who's mid-20s, and yet the oldest woman who's almost 85 in my class. So they're all types of fitness levels, every shape and size. Usually we're busier in the wintertime. We have a little bit of a slack off during summer because of people are more willing to go outside and do things. But wintertime, we see quite a few people come in the doors just because of it. It's being convenient and you don't have to be out and freeze yourself. So, and plus I encourage people mainly because of the fact that it is so dark and so cold that you have to get out there and fight the blues by doing something. How long will I do jazzercise? I don't know. I have no idea. Everybody asks me that, and I just says, well, when my body fails me, I guess that's when I'll quit.
Nancy Murphy lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Daisha Eaton, Christy Schallenberger, and Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
That is all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Avery Lill in Dillingham, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Casey Grove in Anchorage, June Leffler in Wrangell, and Christy Schallenberger in Bethel. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. I'm Zachariah Hughes. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips, investing and exploring on the North Slope and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources. And by First National Bank Alaska, offering online and mobile services to help Alaskans and their businesses bank on the go. Learn how experience and knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com. Each semester, undergraduate students at UAA are learning through hands-on research experiences that take them outside the classroom. Working alongside faculty and professionals in the field, students have used their research to begin exciting careers, to secure patents for their inventions, and to earn national academic accolades. Amazing stories are being written every day at UAA. More at uaa.alaska.edu/admissions. This message sponsored by UAA. This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.